Now, healthcare coverage has been a divisive topic for years, but it reached a critical point following the passage of the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare, in 2010. Now that Republicans control both houses in Congress and with President Trump in the White House, it seemed all but certain that the ACA would be repealed. However, Republicans in Congress haven't been able to agree on new legislation, and their first efforts failed. Right now, legislators are at work on three very different versions of healthcare legislation, from a single-payer plan to an Affordable Care Act fix and a final repeal and replace effort from Republicans. Philip Rocco joins us now. He's an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University and the co-author of Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me, Veronica.
Well, let's start with the law as it currently stands. The Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, still law of the land. Can you give us a quick overview as to why it's had such sticking power, why it's been so hard to dismantle for Republicans, and why it's been such a sore spot for lawmakers?
Well, the Affordable Care Act was a law that I think many people call Obamacare, in part because it's associated primarily with a Democratic president and the Democratic Party. But I think what most people forget, or is hard to remember, is that the basic building blocks of the Affordable Care Act come from a sort of Republican template for health reform in the 1990s, when President Clinton was promoting a health reform bill that ultimately failed. Republicans introduced a bill that looked a lot like what the Affordable Care Act currently is. And so I think that that partly accounts for why it's been difficult for Republicans to introduce some kind of alternative to the Affordable Care Act, because in a lot of ways, the things that they would have to do is gut parts of the law that are pretty consistent with what I think a lot of Republicans are okay with. It's fundamentally organized. The law is organized around markets. It provides some basic consumer protections. And I think that many of the parts of the law that would ultimately be gutted by the repeal and replace plans are, you know, not just politically popular, voters like them, but they're fairly consistent with what Republicans for a long time have actually been okay with.
And on the other hand, it's facing some obstacles in that the markets are not as stable as one would wish. Premiums have been going up quite a lot in some places, and we see right now a possible fix in that Washington Senator Patty Murray has been working with GOP colleagues across the aisle to try to stabilize markets. Can you tell us about that effort?
Yeah, so one of the challenges that I think Democrats, when they wrote the law, didn't necessarily imagine that they would face is that insurers really wouldn't find it as lucrative to be in the business of insuring people who had been sort of historically uninsured. Many of them were very sick. And this basically led in a number of states, especially in rural areas, where there wasn't necessarily a lot of business, that competition, which was supposed to drive down premiums, didn't really emerge. And there was some difficulty in sort of getting younger, healthier people to enroll. And so this sort of bipartisan effort that you see from senators like Patty Murray is kind of organized around doing things to incentivize insurers to come into the marketplace, kind of providing some payments for stabilization, which were initially in the Affordable Care Act but have been sort of removed over time, and trying to make basically prop up the system that exists.
So politically, how viable is that effort from Senator Murray and her GOP colleagues?
I think that it's probably doubtful that as a standalone piece of legislation, it's going to have the number of votes needed to get through the Senate. It is difficult to see how senators who have been on the record as, you know, supporting repeal and replace would have some kind of incentive, especially if they're facing a primary challenge from the right, in order to get on board with that effort. That being said, it's not necessarily the case that the sort of alternative Republican effort has that much support either. So it's kind of a neither nor sort of situation.
Ray, let's talk about that alternative plan in the GOP right now, with a group including Senator Lindsey Graham co-sponsoring a bill that would change the Affordable Care Act. Wouldn't be a full repeal. He gave a synopsis of his plan this week on CNN.
We're keeping the taxes in place on the wealthy. We're repealing the individual mandate, the employer mandate, the medical device tax that 75 senators voted to repeal. There's about $500 billion of money. Rather than trying to run health care from Washington, we're going to block grant it to the states. And here's what will happen. If you like Obamacare, you can reimpose the mandates at the state level. You can repair Obamacare if you think it needs to be repaired. You can replace it if you think it needs to be replaced. It'll be up to the governors. They've got a better handle on this than any bureaucrat in Washington.
And there's Senator Lindsey Graham talking about a new effort to overhaul the Affordable Care Act, relying heavily on block grants. And Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson is also on board with this one, saying Republicans hadn't really given it their all, and this is, you know, one last Herculean effort. Where does this one stand?
So in terms of the policy, I think what Graham kind of fails to mention are three important things. First, the Cassidy Graham bill repeals the law's tax credits for middle-income Americans to help them pay for premiums. It also repeals the cost-sharing subsidies, which help people sort of pay doctors at the office or at the pharmacy counter. The bill also replaces those programs by allowing states to kind of come up with alternatives to the way that the Affordable Care Act works. But probably the most important thing that, you know, Graham kind of buries the lead is that the bill makes some pretty gigantic cuts to Medicaid and not the part of Medicaid that the Affordable Care Act expanded. One thing the law does is put a cap on Medicaid spending for children and non-disabled individuals that would cut, I think, about $175 billion from the program between 2020 and 2026. So that's kind of a big sleeper issue that, you know, has kind of been in Republican repeal and replace bills for a while, but is much less politically popular than anything else that's in there. And I think, you know, if the plan is going to have that element in it, I think it would be you're going to see some major political blowback.
And this plan would transfer a lot of power to the states themselves, who could decide what they wanted to do, as you said. Is that something that you think there's an appetite for among state houses?
That's a good question. One thing that I've been doing in my research recently is kind of looking what states are doing on their own to sort of make innovations in the healthcare delivery system and payment reform. And one thing that I've found is that states, even when there's a lot of energy and interest in kind of making significant reforms, many of the states where the reform is kind of most needed is also where state government doesn't necessarily have the capacity, including the capacity in kind of the bureaucracy to design and implement those reforms. And so even where there's a lot of interest on the part of voters and policymakers to kind of do things on their own, a lot of states just don't have the kind of raw materials to make it happen. And I think that, you know, you might imagine, if the Affordable Care Act is repealed, maybe that would generate a lot of interest and energy on the part of states. But it's not necessarily clear that states would be sort of ready on day one to make that happen.
We're talking to Philip Rocco right now. He's an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. And we're talking about the political battle over healthcare and how it could play out moving forward. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of some of the latest plans coming out of Washington that address healthcare? And by the way, when we come back, we will be talking about Bernie Sanders' push for single-payer health care as well. So yet another option in the works in Washington right now. Whether any of these are viable remains to be seen, but we want to know what you think. Do you think there's maybe a middle ground between the GOP and Democratic plans? Call us at 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue our conversation in a little bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation about the ongoing battle over healthcare in the U.S. with Philip Rocco, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. He's walking us through three takes on healthcare legislation that are going on right now in Washington. And you can join us at 800-642-1234. We'll get to single payer in just a bit. What do you think of the various plans being floated for healthcare in our country? Do you think healthcare is a right or a privilege? And are you on board with any of these plans that we've talked about? A Republican overhaul, a fix to the Affordable Care Act with market stabilization, or, as we'll talk about, a single-payer plan being put forward by Senator Bernie Sanders. Let us know at 800-642-1234. And Philip, let's get to that single-payer plan. Independent Senator Bernie Sanders announced his Medicare for All plan. That's what he's calling it. So far, what do you know about this plan? What's in it?
So it would create a single-payer system of health care, and for people who don't know what that is, a single-payer system is a healthcare system where the government, kind of financed by taxes, covers healthcare costs for everyone in the country, regardless of their income or occupation or health status. So single-payer systems, by definition, eliminate other ways that people receive health insurance. And so Bernie Sanders, this sort of single-payer plan, combines, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, employer-sponsored insurance, TRICARE, which provides health insurance to military families. It leaves like the VA system intact and the Indian Health Service intact, but it combines all of these systems into one plan. And what it does is offer health care to people without any out-of-pocket spending or copays, or emergency room visits. Basically, consumers wouldn't be liable for any out-of-pocket spending except for prescription drugs.
And in an announcement earlier this week, Sanders said that one part of the Medicare for All plan would be to negotiate more with private companies. And here's what he had to say.
We tell the drug companies that the American people are sick and tired of the greed of the pharmaceutical industry. We are no longer going to get ripped off and pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs on the Medicare for All. We're going to negotiate.
Now, Phil, based on what I've seen, what I've read, this plan is more or less dead on arrival. On the other hand, Bernie Sanders is widely believed to be running in 2020, so he could be priming the pump here. What do you think of the prospects of this one?
Well, I think the plan, I agree with you that in the current political context, and even under, I think, a better political context, would probably be dead on arrival. Most importantly, the plan doesn't actually develop a set of rationales for how it would pay for a sort of expansive single-payer health system. But I think what Sanders is doing here, and he's incredibly savvy at this, is trying to change the nature of the debate over health reform, right? The debate we've been having for about the last few years is a debate over whether or not we should repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, which was a health plan that's sort of built with a Republican blueprint. And what Sanders is trying to do is to kind of pull the debate further towards something that is a much more, I think, visible, tangible health reform that actually, an increasing number of Americans who believe that the government should have some role in providing health care think it should be through single payer. So I think what he's trying to do is recognizing that it's probably politically infeasible, certainly at the moment, he's trying to change the nature of the debate that we're having over health reform.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Todd joining us in Appleton. Todd, hello.
Hi, good afternoon. I just have always felt like the government really shouldn't be involved in healthcare. And what I've seen, you know, at the VA and other things like that kind of confirms my feelings about that. But the other thing about Senator Sanders recently had a Canadian doctor on his radio show, and she was explaining to him, you know, oh, yeah, the healthcare works well And then until, you know, if you got like headaches and it's not an emergency situation, then we might not see you for 6 months. So if you need a knee replacement, you might not be for a year. You might not get a hip replacement for a year. So, you know, everything was going along smoothly until all of a sudden, you know, people start waking up and going, wait a minute, this is a whole bureaucratic nightmare that's going to just cost you a lot of grief.
Todd, thank you so much for that. And that is something that Americans have heard when we get into the health care nitty gritty, that the care in Canada, maybe you have to wait a long time for it. Maybe it is paid for by the government, but there are drawbacks. And is this something that's going to be part of the debate?
Yeah, I think Todd is right on the money in saying that this sort of the absence of trust in government in the United States is a huge barrier, a political barrier that, you know, if this plan is going to get off the ground, it's going to have to deal with, right? One of the reasons why Obamacare looks the way that it does, and so many other programs in American government look the way they do, right, finance through taxation, kind of relying on markets, is that, you know, when you talk to Americans about building a big bureaucratic system for administering policy, Americans are not usually too predisposed to like that. So I think the challenge that Sanders faces is trying to shift the terms of the debate by saying, well, defend the system that we currently have, right? Everyone's afraid of a bureaucratic nightmare from a new government program. But what about the bureaucratic nightmare that people face when they try to get coverage now? I think many of the problems that, you know, when you ask people what do they dislike about their health care, the one thing that you kind of hear in interviews and surveys is that it's really confusing. And, you know, you don't know who you have access to. You don't know what prices you're going to ultimately pay. And if you're, you know, leaving a job, you're not sure where your health care is going to come from next and what the premiums are going to be. And I think that Sanders has got to put defenders of the current system kind of on the defensive if he wants to overcome this problem. Whether or not that will translate into a miraculous, you know, development of public trust in government, you know, maybe not. But he's certainly that's the rhetorical, I think, task that he's got in front of him.
And Philip, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks.
That was Philip Rocco, an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, also the co-author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act, joining us there to talk about the ongoing political battle over health care in the United States.